Blog Talk Radio.
Hey y'all, it's your girl D. Scott. So, a lot of times, you know, people ask me, especially after having written, you know, Stanley and everything, A Diary of a Hot Mess, they always ask me, like, well, how do you deal, you know, with your demons, and how do you, you know, how do you combat them? People can sit there and act like, you know, oh no, I don't know people that live like that. Shit, yes you do. You just probably don't talk to them, and that's okay. But I would like to acknowledge my hood roots whenever I can, because sometimes we can end up back there and not want to be there. I am not a peacock. I'm more of a shark. So I don't need to flaunt my feathers and, you know, fucking walk around and act like, you know, this is fit to happen and I'm fit to do this. I don't like fit to do. I'm more of a, I did this shit, I'm a shark, I laid in wait, I'm a night feeder, I waited, I came at y'all at an angle, and I ate your fucking face. I ate your whole life, and that's what I did. Because if I have to tell you, one of my things is, if I have to tell you I'm coming, if I do tell you I'm coming, I'm already here. Girl, do you got? Hey y'all, it's your girl, do you got? Hey y'all, it's your girl, do you got? Hey y'all, it's your girl, do you got?
Peace, everybody. This is Saladin Quinaya Allah. I'm sitting in tonight for my homegirl, D. Scott. She's currently out of town. And tonight we have a very special guest. We have performing artist, dark-skinned activist, and author, Rashida Strober. And, you know, usually when I listen to, like, some blog talk shows, I hear a whole bunch of fluff in the beginning and all of this segue into, you know, what they wanted to get into, and me personally, that kind of bores me, so I'm not going to do a lot of that dancing. You know, I just wanted to read those of you some of the bio of Rashida Strober, and give you some insight into who she is and why I'm actually having her on the show. Those of you who are in the caller queue right now, I will get to you sometime throughout the show. But for the most part, I wanted to just give the sister the platform to talk a little bit about some of her current projects, her perspectives on colorism, especially in the entertainment industry, her dark skin, Girls Are Beautiful campaign that she's doing, and then definitely the Kendrick Lamar controversy that catapulted her into the international spotlight. So, for those of y'all that wanted to get a little idea about who Rashida Strober is, she was the only girl amongst six siblings, and she was born in Florida and had a desire to be a performing artist at a very young age. She actually won a Ruth Eckert Hall Scholarship and a Florida Thespian Festival Superior Award, and was featured on St. Petersburg Times at the age of 13 for her achievements. Now, as a dark-skinned youth, Rashida's self-esteem was brutally assaulted at every turn by classmates who she actually described as making her life a living hell. So by the age of 14, she found herself as a high school dropout, living on the streets, coping with poverty and sexual abuse, which we'll get into. And, you know, she was able to work through that. And 3 years later, at the age of 17, she was able to get her GED, found some employment, and actually enrolled in college. After enrolling in college, she ended up graduating from the University of South Florida with a master's degree in political science, and then she moved out to L.A. to pursue her acting career. And as a self-defined dark-skinned activist, in 2006, she wrote, produced, and starred in her autobiographical one-woman show, The Ice Cream Lady's Dream. Now, this was inspired by the dark-skinned mental abuse of the main character and a speech that she delivered on dark skin in 1998 at St. Petersburg College. She also decided to write A Dark-Skinned Woman's Revenge in the summer of 2006, and after 3 years of living in L.A., she relocated back over here to the southeast to St. Petersburg and continued to write, speak, and perform the play with the theme of striving to just uplift dark-skinned beauty. So she's been a dark-skinned activist since 1998. She's taught in the Pinellas County Schools and St. Petersburg College, appeared on the television series The Forensic Files and various theatrical productions, including TV commercials. She launched the website ActorsTube, a video sharing site to promote actors, actresses, and performers, and her company, ICLD Productions, which is actually the first production company of its kind, producing plays specifically about dark-skinned females and their experience. Other accolades include Playwrights Red Carpet Award Actress of the Year for a heart-wrenching performance as Georgiana Nelson in a dark-skinned woman's revenge stage play that she wrote. And she was also on the cover of Florida Meridian magazine and featured in various local and national newspapers, publications, and television programs. Now, in 2014, Rashida created the International Dark Skin is Beautiful campaign, and that's something that, you know, I definitely wanted to get more insight into. And she's a lead panelist on the Girls Change the World workshop in Pinellas County Schools, a keynote for the Great American Teaching. And she also appears in the 2015 documentary film Unspoken, which is about the existence of colorism in Trinidad and Tobago. Lastly, Rashida was catapulted, like I said, into the international spotlight in April of 2015 for her public criticism of rap artist Kendrick Lamar for being a fake conscious rapper. So, you know, tonight I'm going to have her on the show and talk, like I said, a little bit more in detail about her campaign, her perspectives on colorism, the current projects that she's working on, and, of course, the Kendrick Lamar controversy. And, you know, I wanted to first give my own girl D. Scott a shout out for letting me fill in with her, you know, having Rashida on the show. And, you know, I also wanted to take a moment to shout out my homegirl, Black Paige. She's a beautiful recording artist that's down in a place that we refer to as Sudan, a.k.a. Dallas, Texas. And actually, I wanted to just give those of you a little sample of some of her music. If you wanted to check out some more of her music, you can go to Facebook and just like the official page of Black Paige, and it's spelled just like that, Black Paige. You can connect with her on Twitter at Artist Black Paige, and then Instagram, The Real Black Paige. And then also, if you wanted to just check out her music, and by the way, she's number 3 on the top 10 Dallas charts, and she's also in the top 100 national and global charts. You can check out her music directly at ReverbNation.com/Black Paige. And, you know, check out this joint right here. She has sent it to me today, and it's called Life in the Meanwhile. This is Black Paige.
Just wait.
Page. If you're striving to connect with her to hear more of her music, just go to her Facebook page and like it. It's the official artist page for Black Page, spelled exactly like that, Black and Page. If you want to connect with her on Twitter, just go to Artist Black Page. She's on Instagram at The Real Black Page. And her music, just go to ReverbNation.com/Black Page. And she's number 3 on the top 10 Dallas charts, as well as listed in the top 100 national and global charts. And, you know, that's my sis right there. So without further ado, I'm going to check and see if Rashid is on the line right here. Hold on for a second. Peace. Is this Rashida?
Hey, it's Rashida. How you doing?
Okay, good. I'm excellent. Yo, I was just reading your bio, and I'm looking at this. I'm like, it's a lot of stuff that you've done, you know what I mean? One of the things that I did neglect to mention is, you know, your activism, the history of it, working with the Uhuru movement, as well as I found out that you, when you were in graduate school, that you did a thesis on the impact of structural adjustment policies in Sierra Leone. So, you know, I think that's important to talk about because, you know, sometimes I think people just look at you as a mad black woman and they not really knowing your credentials and the foundation that you're standing on for real. You know, so tell me a little bit about the history of your activism with the Uhuru movement. How did you get involved and what was your reasoning for even being involved with a movement like that?
Right. My father was a Muslim. He actually started a whole bunch of mosques in St. Petersburg. I want to say around the 50s or the 40s. He was like about 30 years older than my mom, so he was older. So my father with him being a Muslim, that's really where all the activism stuff started.
Wow. So when you say Muslim, was he dealing with the Nation of Islam under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad?
Nation of Islam.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so he one of the old school do for self, you know.
Right.
You know, that's a lot different than some of the variations of the nation that we may see today. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So he was very instrumental in your orientation psychologically and culturally.
Absolutely. Mm. So, you know, as I grew up around him and him teaching me about, you know, the Nation of Islam and listening to Malcolm X and Louis Farrakhan and those people, he would always have tapes at the time when I would come to his house and I would listen to them because he didn't watch TV. And he would tell me that the black person was the original person. And so that kind of thing just kind of marinated in my head. And as I got older, there was a man in 98, there was a man named Chairman O'Malley Ashatella. I had read about, I was at work, I remember reading about a mural that he had torn down and how the city of St. Petersburg was supposed to be doing some legal stuff around that. And I read the story, and that's how I kind of like got introduced to the Uhuru movement. I called them all hyped up because I was already an activist anyway. So I'm calling them. They like, come to the meeting. And so somebody came and picked me up, and it was just on from there. I believe that was 99 or 98 or something like that. So I spent about 8 or 9 years working in the movement. Yeah.
Mm. Damn, that's peaceful. So, so what does the demographics look like in St. Petersburg? Is it like, you know, a concentrated percentage of our people there? You know, what percentage, 20%, 50%? How did that actually look?
No, it's not a big concentration. It's, I would say it's around somewhere between 15 to 20%, and that's just, that's being liberal. It might be a little bit less than that, actually.
Wow. So would you say that kind of affected some of your perspectives as well, like living in that kind of environment? And have you lived in other places where it was more of a percentage of our people?
Right. Yeah, it did affect that because St. Petersburg is a, this place is really, it's nice, it's beautiful, it's clean, but it's very racist. The white people here are very racist. It's very backwards. It's hard for black businesses to make it. It's just not a good, really it's not a good place to be if you're young and black. Now, if you're old and rich and white and got some money, you're going to enjoy yourself, but it's the reverse for black people. And I did live in L.A., by the way, for about three and a half years, so that was a whole different dynamic there. But,
yeah, that's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, too. Like, how is the, is it racism out in Cali, too, and how is it different, you know, than St. Petersburg?
The thing about Los Angeles is the black people, like, I went days without seeing white people, except if I went to work up on Wilshire when I was working there. The neighborhood that I lived in, it consisted of primarily Latino people and black people. There was, I never had any problems with the Latino people that live right next door to me, but there was a lot of violence between the black and Latino population there when I lived there.
Wow. Yeah, I heard it's like that out there. I mean, I was out there briefly, like, earlier this year sometime, you know, so I wasn't out there long enough to really get a pulse on those kind of dynamics, you know what I mean? But, yeah, I've, people that I know that's out there, they say the exact same thing. I'm like, damn, you know, in New York, you know, you got, we all look at ourselves as being oppressed by white people, you know what I'm saying? I mean, but you do have your pockets of people that want to look at themselves as Hispanics, and they check off that box, Hispanic and white, on their applications and shit. But, you know, you do have some people that identify with our struggle as well. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about the thesis that you did in graduate school about the impact of structural adjustment policies in Sierra Leone. How did you even get involved in that? Why were you even interested in doing something like that?
Well, I've always had a love of Africa and the African people and of blackness, which stems from my father. But also, while I was at the University of South Florida, I had to fight my way to get into that program. I had to literally go in there yelling and screaming and cursing. So I had a lot of anger in me I was, because of the fact of the way things can be for a black person down south when you're trying to move towards higher education. So I had a hard time getting in the master's degree program. It was all whitewashed. I was like the only black female in there for like about 2 or 3 years. So it was very difficult. So I had a professor from Sierra Leone, and he kind of sensed my anger, and he kind of took me under his wing, if you will. And then I had a boyfriend from Sierra Leone as well. So couple that with my interest in Africa itself, I said, I always knew that I was going to focus somehow on Africa and why Africa is the way it is in terms of the economics and that kind of thing. And so, you know, being that my professor was from Sierra Leone, I had an inside look from a person that was actually from there in terms of the situation economically and the Civil War and the impact of the Civil War on, you know, things like education and health care and that kind of thing. And so I felt like I was able to kind of do some type of service towards African people in studying the conditions, you know, that led up to the Civil War and the aftermath. So that was sort of my contribution, if you will.
Wow, yo, did you ever think about publishing that in a book, if you haven't done it already or anything like that?
No, I've never thought about that. That's a good idea. I never, but it's funny, I don't think about the thesis. I'm so caught up on that. I don't even think about the thesis anymore.
Yo,
like
when I seen that, when I seen that, my antennas went up. I was like, yo, I would love to be able to analyze something like that, because, you know, that's kind of more of the lines of the way in which I think, you know, because I think that it shows a dimension of you that the mainstream media is not putting out there. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, absolutely, at the same time, you got a master's degree in political science and shit, you know, and you're doing theses on the impact of structural adjustment policies in Sierra Leone. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, that's the
totally
thing.
It's
my whole foundation deals with looking at the structure of why we are the way that we are. By the way, my undergrad is in history. And so I spent a long time studying different types of history. So I always want to understand why we are the way we are. And my question was always sideways and sometimes directly to the professors. Well, why is Africa like this? Why is Africa the place where there's the most cases of HIV, poverty, et cetera, et cetera? And so to me, I wanted to deal with the dark people of the world. To me, in my head, I always connected it back to, why is it that the dark people, the literal dark-skinned people of the world, suffer the most? And it's a concerted effort. If you look at the thesis, I talk a lot about the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, which is ran by racist white people. So at the root of all of this, the destruction of the dark people of the world, forget about Kendrick Lamar and all that. That's just another symptom of racism and white supremacy. But at the root of it is racism and white supremacy. That's at the root of it. And so everything comes out of that in terms of when we look at our situation as black people in America, wherever, in the diaspora, wherever we are. It comes out of that system of racism and white supremacy. I love Dr. Cress Welsing and Neely Fuller. They articulate this whole concept the best. They're awesome at it.
Oh, yeah.
So,
definitely. Dr. Amos Wilson is one of my patron saints as well. And he's very good at just the analysis of the system and all of that. You know what I mean? So do you know, it's like, you know, when I first saw the things that you're doing, I realized that you are really attacking white supremacy head on. You know
Absolutely.
What I'm saying? Because you're dealing with the extreme dynamic opposites. You know, you have some, you know, black people that say they identify with being black or whatever, and, you know, they may not be dark-skinned. You know, and it's something that you just mentioned about the professor from Sierra Leone, about how you had an inside perspective on some of the things that were going on in that country. And I think that one of the things that I started to see with the different initiatives and the things that you're talking about is that you just like other sisters and brothers that I know that are dark-skinned, I have a sister that I work with that's out here in my city. Her name is Saya, and she talks along the same lines that you do. And she gives me also an inside perspective on what it feels like to deal with white supremacy from the perspective of being dark-skinned, because I'm not dark-skinned. So I can't speak from that perspective. I mean, if we want to talk in general terms of being black people, we can relate on some of those levels, you know. Even if we're talking on a level of just being people, I can relate on that too. But if you're talking about it from the perspective of a female or a woman, I can't relate there. All I could do is listen to what you're saying, you know. And I think it's the exact same way when it comes to the science of colorism. If you're telling me about something that you've experienced as a dark-skinned person, if I'm not dark-skinned, then all I can do is concede to what it is that you have to share, you know. Because one of the things that is like a saying that we have in terms of this society, it's like, if white people, you know, are, you know, have a little cough, then that means black people have a cold. But dark-skinned people got the flu.
That's an understatement.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, so, you know, that's one thing that I realized with a lot of the things that you're doing, that you are actually giving people an inside perspective on this whole idea of addressing global white supremacy from a dark-skinned perspective. I even seen that you created a whole glossary of dark-skinned terms and phrases, such as darkism, beauty bargaining power, post-traumatic dark skin syndrome, and imposed inferior beauty position. You know, I was like, damn, you on a whole different level. And people looking at you like,
well,
oh, she just a mad black
woman. I'm a theorist, and I'm a paradigm creator. One of the things that I've learned, one of the things that I was forced to do in grad school is to learn about all these white males who created paradigm shifts. And I said to myself, I'm my own thinker. I can create my own paradigm. And that's what I believe people should do. I don't think you should necessarily follow when you know that some new things need to be done. I think you should critique and knock down paradigms and create new ones. And that's what I'm about. But just real quickly on the note of speaking about Sierra Leone, the thing about racism and white supremacy is that it creates intra-class or race wars between colonized and oppressed people. So, for example, in Sierra Leone, the white people, they came in, you know, they took over Sierra Leone, you know, during imperialism and the worldwide expansion, and they created wars between the different groups in Sierra Leone, fighting over the resources that they had stolen. And it's the same thing, the same exact thing that's going on when we look at light skin and dark skin. They brought the black people over here to America and another part of the Caribbean, and they created intra wars between black people, light skin and dark skin. So this is what they do. I clearly understand that. I remember I used to get into a heated argument with this white guy. I can't remember his name in grad school. This guy literally hated me, because I would say that Europeans are the most violent people, most destructive people that have ever touched the planet. He used to get so angry, but it still holds true. They are.
What do you do? Get angry and then get violent?
Well, he wouldn't get violent, but we just go back and forth verbally with each other. And I could clearly, I didn't hate him, but he seemed to hate me simply because I'm telling the truth. This is a historical fact. All you have to do is look at history. This is nothing that's being made up. These people go around the world imposing their worldview on other people, trying to, you know, take the land and extract the raw materials to, you know, create material wealth. This is what they do. Mm. And they'll do it violently at any cost. And they create all kinds of problems, such as the dark skin, light skin problem. That's just one symptom among many of the problems that these people have created. That's not to say I hate them. That's just to deal with facts.
Now, I'm sure you've heard the rebuttal well, you can't group all white people together, and I know some good white people. John at my job brings me lunch every morning, and he's a good guy. So how do you respond to people that would say that you can't group all white people together? You know what I'm saying?
I totally agree with that. I mean, I work in healthcare, and I work with children. So I love all human beings. I take care of my white patients as equally as well as I take care of my black or Asian or what. I don't care. They're human beings. Calling out the atrocities that white people have done or people of European descent have done doesn't mean that you think that all of them are not, or all of them are bad, or there's no white people that are good white people. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's just the situation that we find ourselves in, and the situation that most white people find themselves in as a result of black oppression and black people doing all this free work. They find themselves in a better situation than black people are in. They have all this money and all this wealth and all this, you know, we don't have that. We're working from the bottom up. And so is that wrong? Yeah. Do white people need to say, you know what, we need to do something about this to address the inequalities? Yes. Are they?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, and
problem.
I think that
it's a serious problem.
Yeah, and I think, too, that it speaks more to the idea that there's a specific status quo globally as well as nationally where we're at here in America, where you have a certain group of people who phenotypically, based just upon appearance, are reflective of that status quo. And because of that, there are certain privileges that come along with people being defined categorically as members of that status quo. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And either you're participating and upholding it or you're not. You know, so I think sometimes in terms of speaking about white people, that it's really articulating a white mindset of supremacy, of superiority, of institutionalized racism that a lot of people simply buy into and uphold, and they're not really dedicated to doing anything to undermine that system or to change it to make it anything that's equitable for all of the members of the human family that live here in America, you know?
Right.
And unfortunately, you don't really see a lot of people who are in that position to get those privileges based upon being a member of that status quo, to just give that shit up and be like, nah, you know, I just want to do what's fair.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't want these privileges. I mean, I think that even if a lot of us were in that position, we may find it difficult to just give up those privileges and be like, yo, I just want to be fair with everybody.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
You know, so go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask a little bit more about that in terms of being a female. What does beauty, bargaining power have to do with that whole idea of global white supremacy and institutionalized racism? Because that is one of the terms or phrases that you coined in your glossary.
Right. Beauty, bargaining power is all about economics. Wherein if a woman is white, then of course she's going to be at the top of the economic ladder when it comes to dealing with how women in American society accumulate and acquire wealth. So what that means is if she's a white woman, of course, she's going to be able to capitalize on corporate opportunities, job opportunities, educational opportunities, in the movie industry, in the husband industry, the boyfriend industry. She's going to get the better of the, you know, the men who are economically able and stable and able to provide. And, you know, if she's the lighter the woman is, and this has been proven, people like to debate me on this all the time, but I always like to say, you'd be a fool to debate facts. It doesn't make any sense. I'm not going to argue with people over facts. The colorism literature clearly shows that the lighter a woman is, and again, the white woman is at the top of this food chain, the better off our economic opportunities. And it's exemplified in the ways that I just expressed through marrying into, you know, education, any all means by which people gain economically. Lighter skin is going to be better. So as you go down the food chain, the darker skinned woman is, of course, on the bottom, and that's worldwide, not just in a, you know, over in India, all over the world. The darker the woman is, the least off she is. And so the darker a woman is, it kind of alleviates her beauty bargaining power, like, therefore her economic power. So she has to really fight hard to advance economically. So, yeah, I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, I mean, and I see people turning that shit into, you just don't like light-skinned women. You know, it's dark-skinned women against light-skinned women, and they don't understand what you're actually saying.
No, you know what I mean? I made a video about the light-skinned woman that saved my life, and her name is Vita. May she rest in peace. She was very light-skinned, extremely light-skinned, and if it wasn't for her, I would have never gotten my GED. I would have never gotten off the street. I wouldn't have never gotten an apartment. I wouldn't have never gotten my master's degree. It was because of her and her help that she gave me, and her daughter, who is also very light-skinned. Shamina, if you're listening, thank you. I don't thank her a million times. This same light-skinned woman who's my best friend, she... Over the last 5 years, she's gone to all of my dark-skinned slaves. These people, they really don't understand who I am and where I'm coming from. I think sometimes they do understand. They just don't want to understand because it's a big elephant in the room, and people don't want to deal with the elephant in the room. They just kind of want to tiptoe around it, and so they'd rather... make up things and say, oh, you hate this and that and the third, and it doesn't make logical sense at the end of the day. It really doesn't. So,
yeah, because you know what? I didn't really see too many white people touching this whole subject of, you know, you being a dark-skinned activist and your campaign with dark-skinned beauty, and I didn't really see too many white people touching that. I seen more black people, like, speaking out publicly against you.
Actually, it's funny that you mentioned that.
You know?
It's funny that you mentioned that, because before this whole Kendrick Lamar thing came to fruition, white people have actually supported what I've done. I've been in major newspapers. I was on the cover of the Floridian, which is a major paper in Florida, and they did a story on me, a white writer. Also,
you know they like that dark skin.
Yeah, I mean, it's like white people actually have supported my plays and what I'm doing. I gotta be honest. When I was living in LA, I was performing my play at a place called Theater Theater. A white man owned it, and he kind of saw it and took and liked it and was like, "Wow, I want to direct this." And I couldn't find a black director, and this guy was willing to. This guy has been on major soaps, different movies, and I mean, we worked together to put together the first version of this of a dark skinned woman's revenge, and it was like, so it's really weird because I'm talking to black people. This to me is not even a white thing in terms of the fact that I recognize that white people cannot solve this problem. They created it, yes, but they cannot solve this problem. This is a problem that black people have to solve within themselves. So I think that's one of the reasons why I'm getting so much resistance, because black people know deep down in their hearts that this is something that we have to figure out on our own. How do we deal with this whole colorism thing?
And at the same time, you're forcing people to go back to the root, which is the foundation, which is, in our language, we call dark skin the knowledge seed, because knowledge is the foundation. You know, so some people don't want to go back to the root, you know, because there's a lot of us that still have those kind of ideas in our head about who the original woman is, who the original man is, and, you know, confronting that also forces a person to confront a lot of their own misconceptions. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's almost like a form of cognitive dissonance that I see that goes
right.
on with a lot of our people. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's interesting because my old dad, my father, he's lighter skinned. And we have Tuscarora Native American ancestry, so that is one reason why he's lighter skinned. But even with my complexion, right, I'm brown skinned, but some of my family members live in Canada, and I kind of look dark skinned in comparison to them. They're so light skinned.
Hmm.
So my father grew up with that sense of colorism, and he made a decision very early on in his life that he wanted to marry a dark skinned woman, and that is my mother. And she's dark skinned. And
interesting.
Some of his family had problems with that.
I'm pretty sure.
You know what I'm saying? So he orientated me a certain way growing up. He collected African artifacts. He always taught us about classical civilization in terms of our people. Every year, it was a family affair to watch Shaka Zulu when it came on. You know, we always, he always kept me culturally conscious growing up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, I'm familiar with some of the things that you talk about and the perspectives that you come from. And that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to have you on the show, so that you can have this opportunity to just articulate more about what your campaign is about, why it is important, so that people have an opportunity to really listen to who you actually are and not be misled by the mainstream media or all this other shit, because I see the value in your message. And sometimes people get lost in the translation. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about, you know, I was really intrigued by the glossary that you created with the dark skin terms and phrases, but tell me a little bit about how you came up with the idea of post-traumatic dark skin syndrome.
I constantly think, I just think, some people say I overthink things. I've been accused of that a lot. And so I would do this play in schools and in different venues, and people would ask questions, and they would mainly ask me about my upbringing. And to be honest, I don't really like to talk about my upbringing because it was extremely painful. And when I start to think back on it and all the, you know, all the things that I went through with people, with mainly black men calling me all kinds of names, you black, skinny and ugly, African booty, all kind of stuff. It was very traumatic for me as a child and as a adolescent. I'm the type of person that really takes things to heart. And so when I thought about that, I thought that this is traumatic for me. I'm experiencing something that's, you know, really traumatizing to me. And that's one of the reasons why I decided to articulate it through the performing arts, because I'm a naturally emotional person. And, you know, the performing arts is a natural place for an emotional person to be at. And so that's really where it came from, just thinking back and speaking about my experiences and having these talks, you know, after performances with people and having to go back and dig deep and recall that it was just traumatic for me. And then I don't watch TV. I just read and, you know, think about stuff all the time. And I just wrote it down. One time I just, I believe I wrote an article back in, a couple of years ago, it might have been 2011, I can't remember. I was substitute teaching one day and had some downtime, and I just started writing about it, post-traumatic dark and started talking about all of this stuff that I went through. And that's really where it came from, just having it, just digging deep and constantly thinking about these things and needing a way to express it and get it out. Because that's one of the things that you have to do when you experience stuff like this that's very traumatic to you, whether it be, I don't know, whether you have been abused or raped or whatever the case may be, people need to let this stuff out. They need to find an outlet for it. And so it was, for me, it was just through writing and through theorizing and saying, you know what, I'm going to create a new paradigm in terms of what it means to be dark skinned. all these things. And then again, too, another thing with me is wanting to have some type of control over the situation. I couldn't really control the situation when I was growing up, but as an adult, wanting to just define it and, like I said, control it and operationalize it, and that's what I was really trying to do.
Now, in addition to having those kind of outlets, what other ways can dark-skinned people cope with dealing with that kind of trauma? Because I sit and I think about it, and I'm like, well, if you go to some kind of therapist or a counselor and they may be a white person, that may be some shit that they just can't relate to at all. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, maybe dealing with this particular, I mean, what would you recommend, you know, with some people that may not have that kind of creative arts or performing arts outlet? What other ways could people cope with that?
What I recommend is that you talk to somebody that you can trust and that you can really tell your true feelings to, because this is one of the things that I started doing over the last 2.5 years is actually, people think that this is ridiculous, but it's not to me because I know the messages that I get. I started to actually counsel or kind of just listen and be there for dark-skinned women and men who have been going through some type of trauma associated with their dark skin. So what I encourage people to do is to seek out a person that's not going to judge you, that's just going to, because a lot of times dark-skinned people, especially the women, feel like they won't talk about it because they say, oh, they're going to say I'm jealous or I'm hating. Well, you need to find somebody that you can talk to that's not going to judge you, that's going to listen to you and be empathetic towards your feelings because they're valid. So that's the number one thing that I would recommend, because there I feel the healing can start. Because I've actually, the women that I've been talking to, and there's one man, I could actually see a progression of healing from talking to them, just by having an outlet from somebody that understands. And then with the children in the school, I worked with kids for a long time, and I've seen so much stuff, so it's not even funny. If you are in the educational system, and if you see children saying, oh, you black and ugly, or oh, you black, because I saw this so many times, the adults need to address it. Don't be worried about, oh, I'm going to lose my job. I never cared about any of that. And I can tell you right now, when I addressed it head on, and when I educated the white teachers, they thanked me. So that's another thing. In the school system, address it head on with the kids. And for a child, because sometimes, because I know that for me being a dark-skinned girl, I was very introverted. I would not speak to adults about what was going on, what was happening to me. So I encourage children to go to an adult and talk to them, because I feel it's a form of bullying. I really do. One time I saw a dark-skinned boy, I'll never forget him. This little girl called him black. And this was third grade, and he took the table, threw the table over, threw the chairs, just went ballistic. And he was this real little dark-skinned, little handsome little boy. I was like, it was crazy. But this is what happened. This is what colorism does in 2015. I've seen this with my own eyes. Nobody can tell me. So you got to address it and deal with it honestly, head on. Because if you don't, it's just going to keep going, and it's going to keep festering, and, you know, the problem is going to continue. So those are some of the things that I would suggest.
Wow, that's peace. Rasita, I got a caller on the line right now. I'm going to bring them in.
Sure.
And see. Caller, your area code is 678. You're on the line right now. Stay in your lane with D. Scott. Just state your name and where you're calling from. Area code 678.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the line right now. Where are you calling from, and what's your name?
I'm in Atlanta. This is Stephanie McClain. Really don't have nothing to say. I'm just listening.
Word. Okay, well, what you think about
Stephanie,
what you've been
hearing
so
far?
Hi, Rashida. I'm good. I didn't hear you, sir. Can you repeat yourself?
Oh, I said, what do you think about what you've been hearing so far?
Oh, well, I actually, I've been connected with Rashida since about May. I've written a blog post about colorism And I understand her struggle. Me, myself, I deal with mental illness. Well, I've been labeled, you know. So I could relate to her issues that she's faced with colorism because of her abuse that she experienced emotionally. However, you know, I'm a brown-skinned person, so, you know, regardless of the skin complexion issue, I understand how it can impact, you know, a person's mental health. You know, being called names such as Blackie, you know, just being called, you know, Crispy, you know, you hear these names all the time from other black people that is just degrading for, you know, black people to talk about each other like that, you know, calling each other derogatory names or the same race. I mean, I think that's just asinine. I think it's stupid. You know what I'm saying? And we're all the same color. So, you know, the problem in the black community is that the stuff that Rashida is speaking about, especially on black YouTube, because that's how I found her, people are going to be very, very, they're not going to understand how she's bringing it out there because of her delivery, and she, you know, she's creative with it. So the average person who, you know, feels the way they feel about black people in a negative sense, to where, especially some of the black men on YouTube, I noticed that, you know, there's a lot of black men on YouTube. It's not all black men, but a lot of them, they have a thing with dark-skinned females. Like, they hate dark-skinned women. You know, it's name-calling with dark-skinned women. It's almost like cyberbullying, but not undercoverly. But, like, they're just straight forward with it, and it needs to be addressed in the black community. It's really an issue, and for her to talk about it openly, you know, it makes me respect her because of the fact that she's really putting her life on the line talking about this stuff.
Hold on for one second. You said that you wrote a blog about that. Where can people check out the blog?
The name of the website is called RFLD, MHAGroup.com. So it's RFLD, Mental Health Advocacy Group, MHAGroup.com. And I wrote my views on it, and, you know, Rashida actually shared, you know, some of her information regarding her experiences with colorism. And I just spoke about it because it needs to be addressed, because a lot of times, you know, we go on YouTube, we type in her name, and we find Kendrick Lamar. Everything she said about Kendrick Lamar, I feel like that has nothing to do with what her movement is all about. And people are, you know, discrediting her. You know, they're not understanding her campaign. I mean, it's just common sense. Like, okay, somebody starts a campaign for drunk driving. There's a reason behind it. So she's talking about, you know, the Dark Skin is Beautiful campaign for, you know, little girls and women that experience dark skin mental abuse. What's so hard about comprehending that?
It just makes
sense. But people are not used to hearing this stuff. So it's like, okay, well, she's talking about, you know, dark skin abuse. Okay, what about black people in general? What about the, you know, the abuse from, you know, slavery, post-traumatic slave, you know, it just gets to where some black people would think she's separating, you know, dark-skinned people from the black community in general, but she's speaking on a particular issue within the black community that people need to just comprehend. But you can't force nobody, because everybody experienced a different struggle within the black community. So, you know, that's just my answer on things. I found her on, I won't mention his name because he doesn't deserve play like that to me, but I found her, you know, blogger YouTube channel, and I was like, wow, from a dark-skinned person that could speak so badly about another dark-skinned person that has a movement, I just think that's just totally disrespectful. And it
we know what that is. That's self-hate. That's self-hate, you know. But sis, I wanna thank you for calling in and just adding on, as well as letting us know where we can go and check out some of the things that you're doing as well. And I just wanted to take a moment, too, and I wanted to share another song from one of my sis. She's a dark-skinned sis that lives down in Dallas, Texas. Her name is Black Page. If you wanted to check her out, you just go to Black Page on Facebook.
Okay.
And she's also on Twitter at Artist Black Page and Instagram at The Real Black Page. And I thought that it was appropriate to have her on the show as well because, in some sense, she advocates the exact same thing. She's beautiful. She's dark-skinned. She's talented. And this is one of her joints right here. It's called A Perfect Saturday.
Okay.
Again, that was the Queen Black Page. If you want to check out our music, go to ReverbNation.com/Black Page. She's number 3 on the top 10 Dallas charts as well as the top 100 national and global charts. I'm here with the performance artist, author, and dark-skinned activist Rashida Strober. Hey, Rashida, I got a bunch of calls. Yo, I'm gonna take another call. Is that peace?
Right ahead.
Rashida, you still there? Okay.
I'm here.
Okay. Yo, this is 313. It looks like a Michigan number. I'm gonna bring you in. 313.
Hello.
I got you on the line. What's going on, bro? Let me know where you're calling from.
Yes,
and
sir,
who
brother.
You are.
This is Nomar Watakoff calling from Detroit, Michigan.
Peace. Glad you're calling
Hi,
in, bro.
Noah.
What's going on?
Hey, Queen Rashida, how you doing, lady?
I'm great. Good to hear from you.
Oh, you too, always. Yeah. I had to call in. I've been listening to the show. And I learned a lot of things about you and about, you know, giving more insight and depth as to the movie.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And as the brother Saladin was saying, you know, I'm not dark skinned. You know what I'm saying? I'm not light skinned. I'm more brown skinned. And as a part of consciousness, I believe as your consciousness rises, you begin to understand as an African that the dark skin is our original racial type. That's our original model for who we
the
are.
The prototype.
And also, right, and also, as the brother was saying, we don't really know. I mean, that's also that humility. We should defer to a dark-skinned person when they're talking about dark-skinned situations, dark-skinned issues, dark-skinned feelings. So for myself, you know, what you're doing is of the most critical importance because it is an absolute truth that discrimination against dark-skinned and it has always been part of our contact with these people and in this present era that we live in for the last 500 years. There's absolutely no question about it. And it's very important that people who are not dark-skinned are going to have to make the same psychological concession, the same psychological identification and growth and maturity that they're demanding from white people. It's the exact same thing is required from them now. But I see all the confusion. They jump to the same conclusion that white people jump to when black people say they love black people. The people who are not dark jump to the same conclusion when you say you love dark people. They simply don't get it. So I think it's a point that really what you're saying, you know, and I never thought about what the brother was saying, or rather what the sister that called in was saying, was that it's dangerous. Because I see the vicious attitudes of the brothers on YouTube and, you know, but to be honest, just in everyday life, the attitude toward a dark-skinned sister is the most vicious and hostile attitude, and I believe it's reflected from the same lie that we're living in this society. I mean, we all know that white people ain't superior to nobody. In fact, the contrary is true. So I think we really just need to realize, we're going to have to come to that realization, just as I have, that the black people are the truth. And the dark-skinned black person is the original truth. And, I mean, that's the reason why I believe it's such a problem now, because we live in a culture that's a total lie. So it wants to do everything it can to stamp out the truth. And your voice, you know, on the level that you're bringing it, you know, and the strength and the firmness, you know, of which is need to be present in any type of leadership, but it's so desperately needed within our race to have firmness of conscience and leadership with no vacillation, no negotiation. This is a movement to love black, dark-skinned people, to give dark-skinned people a voice. You've been quiet for too long, and everybody expects you to be quiet and to be very honest. It's the same way. Yep. Now, if you don't stand up and stay firm, just like you are now, it's the same situation. When black people get an advantage, the dark people sink right to the bottom. When Marcus Garvey came to this country, the first thing he said when he went to the NAACP office to try to get support from Du Bois, he said he didn't know if he was in a white office or a black office. But everybody was light, super light. He went to a church and sat in the front row, and the preacher of the church had a fit, was about to have a fit because he was so dark. And the dark people are not supposed to sit in the front. I myself, when I was back in the day teaching Sunday school, I went to a church here with the hood people that are this city council type political family, and I believe it was Plymouth Church, and one of the sons was the preacher. And I went in there just as I was becoming conscious, and they had a choir that was singing, and the dark girl was in the back row of the choir. And all of the light people was in front, and I sat right there in the front, and I locked my eyes on this girl, and I wouldn't look anywhere else. And they kind of looked at me until finally, you know, they was about to have a fit. They was like, what's this nigga looking at? What's this nigga problem? Because I was determined to stay locked on this system because I was coming into my level of consciousness. So what you're doing is of the most fundamental and critical importance, because our people have to wake up. We're not going to be able to get anywhere if as soon as we get an advantage, certainly people that are not dark skinned have been discriminated against. Certainly I have, but I'm also very, very clear. There's no doubt in my mind. I remember years ago when I was working at IBM, and this was back in the days when we was wearing perms, they had the nerve to tell me one day, Norma, your hair really like that, ain't it? I said, no, my hair is nasty. And I wasn't even conscious at the time, but I knew what they were trying to do. They were trying to extract me from my race and from my connection to darker skinned people. So what you're doing, sister, is of the most fundamental and critical importance, and you can be sure.
No doubt.
I'm with you.
No doubt. Hey, bro, I appreciate you adding on. I appreciate that. One of the things that you made me think about is when I started to become more conscious myself, I started to realize how this colorism permeates just the entertainment industry as well. Like, for example, when you look at a lot of the hip-hop videos, they have females on there that are lighter skin, except if you go back to the X-Plan days. You know what I'm saying? Now, even in these hip-hop award shows, I was watching the recent BET Awards, and every brother that you've seen, I say it more than 90%, the female that was by his side was lighter skinned than him. You know what I'm saying? And when I was talking earlier about Rashida creating this glossary of dark skin terms and phrases to basically introduce new nomenclature or a way of redefining the paradigm of how to attack global white supremacy, one of the things that I've been seeing too as is a pushback from the mainstream media. For example, one of the things that they use now that you will recognize in a lot of commercial ads, in a lot of marketing and promotion, is they have a term called ethnically ambiguous. So you have people, whether they're males or females, that you can't even, when you look at them, you can't really tell where they come from.
Right.
They kind of look Asian, but at the same time, they kind of look like they're Middle Eastern, but they could be Spanish or they can be, you know, mixed, or they're called ethnically ambiguous. And they're utilizing that to promote an agenda which on the same level supports global white supremacy. So,
bro,
I want to thank you for calling in. And
my pleasure.
Yeah, I want to take some more calls, too. We got like 20 minutes left, Rashida.
Thank you for hosting the call, brother, for bringing the sister on. This is critical information. Talk to you soon,
lady.
Oh,
no doubt. Thanks for adding
on,
too,
bro. Thank you. Take care, Nomo.
Yes, sir. Peace.
Okay, I got the 405. I think that's Oklahoma. I got 405 on the line. State your name. State where you calling from. You're on the line with Saladin, and I got Rashida on here. 405, you on the line. Area code 405. Okay, I guess they just listening. Okay, I got another caller. Area code 716.
Okay.
That looks like New York.
Okay.
Area code 716.
Yeah.
You on the line?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, what's going on?
Hi, this is
State
Nina.
State your name,
actually,
where you calling from?
My name is Nina. I'm actually calling from Chicago right now, but I used to live in the 716. So I'm calling because I'm just a little bit confused because, you know, being a woman is hard enough, you know what I mean? And then being a woman, and when I went back and I actually did the research before I listened into the show to see what Rashida had actually written about Kendrick Lamar, so the first thing I'm thinking is, did y'all used to date? That's a direct question.
Did me and Kendrick Lamar used to date?
Correct.
No. I've never met him a day in my life.
Okay. So you understand that when you read what you wrote, and it was so explosive and coon and motherfucker and all this other stuff, it makes women feel like, you know, dark skin, like to any woman, makes it feel like, well, maybe they had a history previous that maybe he snubbed you or maybe you were upset about something else, because that was just a little bit too emotional without any statistical fact like what Saladin was putting in behind it. And then it sounded like you took this and took it upon your shoulders. And you know that when they quote you, they put in quotation marks dark-skinned activists because they're still waiting on you to make moves to prove, you know what I mean, this self, you know, proclaim. So I don't understand where the anger is coming from, and we should be celebrating the fact that this man has been with this woman for 10 years, that she is at least of color, that she's not a thot, that she's not, you know, literally, he's not, you know, that's not a baby's mom, and that with the statistics rising and the fact that black men are just not marrying us, period, you know, I'm just happy to see that he's getting married at all. You understand what I'm saying? So I just want to know where that anger comes from, because I know you have a book coming out, so we're all interested in reading that. But, you know, everything is not dark skin versus light skin. It reminds me of the Spike Lee movie back in the day, school days, when they had, you know, the light skin girls dancing against the dark skin girls. It just doesn't make sense for us to be divided within our own culture. And we got people burning down churches in South Carolina. It didn't matter what color he was, because when we all died, they was all black and charred and burned it. So those are the things that we should be focusing on instead of what some celebrity is doing with his personal life, especially if you don't know him. Because I was like, well, maybe she knows him. You understand what I'm saying? So where did that anger come from?
Let me address that. You asked some very loaded questions. The anger comes from the fact that dark-skinned women are not equal. The beauty of the dark-skinned women is not equal, and it is the responsibility of the black man to help to equalize that. And when you have a person like Kendrick Lamar, who is a celebrity, that's why he's important. See, I always like to focus on the celebrities because the media has the ability to impact the minds of people, young people, old people, it doesn't matter. And so if you have a man like Kendrick Lamar, and in the book I did write about him fooling dark-skinned women who write songs that makes you think, oh, he's for dark-skinned women, or who puts dark-skinned women in his videos, and then you turn around and you marry a non-dark-skinned woman, that is a contradiction on his part. It has nothing to do with me hating non-dark-skinned women. That's not even what this is about. And I've had to address this many times, and I'll address it here again. The Dark Skin is Beautiful campaign is not about light-skinned women. I never, in fact, talk about light-skinned women because it's not the responsibility of a
non-dark skin. But you did when you called his girlfriend. You did when you called his girlfriend out. Like you specifically said light-skinned women.
Wait a minute. I called him out.
But you did bring
light-skinned
women. Right.
Let's
but you brought her into it. You're not talking about his way of dress. You're talking about his choice.
No. Let's deal with facts. I called Kendrick Lamar out. His girlfriend does not have anything to do with it. And I will not allow people to put light-skinned women into this movement in a negative light.
But you brought him in.
What it's about.
But you brought, him in. That's
no,
why
no, no, no.
Be
Richard, that's what you brought
what
in.
You
that's
said.
Your perception.
No,
I'm telling
not.
You right
it's,
now
it's America's
that that's
perception.
Not what
that's
this movement
why
it is about.
Yo,
hold on.
You're putting
y'all
you in parentheses.
Because
you're not even really an activist.
Views of it when I'm clearly telling you.
No, it's not a view. It is a fact. No, I am listening.
I'm telling you what my views are, and you're not listening to that.
Y'all gotta talk one at a time because I know I got two ears, but I can't listen to both of y'all at the same time, and nobody else could either. So one of y'all gotta say something, and then the other person gotta share what they got to say too. So Rashida, since you the guest on the show, go ahead and say what you got to say.
Right. Once again, the way that I look at this is that people are using this as a opportunity to attack a dark-skinned woman for speaking out on dark-skinned discrimination. And what they're trying to do is reverse it, when in fact it has nothing to do with light-skinned women. Now, people can take whatever they want to take from what I'm saying, but I'm telling you about me and my movement. It has never had anything to do with light-skinned women. It has everything to do with the fact that black men discriminate against dark-skinned women. Now, the term that I used was non-dark-skinned, and again, that's an ambiguous term. I didn't say light-skinned. I didn't say white-skinned. I said non-dark-skinned. And what that means is that could be any non-dark-skinned person. Essentially, what I was dealing with is Kendrick Lamar. And the fact of him deceiving dark-skinned women, like I said, he's pretending like he likes them by portraying them in his videos, by speaking on the colorism issue in his song, and then you're not living what you speak. Because, again, I don't take back anything I say. Let me be real clear about that. I don't take back anything. If I was saying this to somebody's face, I'd be saying the exact same thing. Kendrick Lamar is a fraud. He's a fake conscious. I don't want to. May I curse on your radio show? Because I can say it. He's a fake conscious motherfucker. I hope you guys are listening to me clearly because of his stance that he has taken. Okay? And this is typical of what a lot of black entertainers do. They'll come out and fool dark-skinned women, black women, because market research has shown that it is the women that will be the purchasers of records and concert ticket sales. It's the women. And so they know what they're doing. It's a marketing ploy. But then you come out with a non-dark-skinned woman or, in my case, a non-dark-skinned woman, because that's what I'm specifically speaking about. That, to me, is fraud. Whether you agree with me or not, really I'm not asking nobody to agree because I don't seek people's approval. I say what I have to say and do what I need to do, and I focus on the impact of it and forcing people to deal head-on with the issue, and that is what we have to do. And what this man has done is fraudulent. If I ever get an opportunity to tell him, I'll tell it to him to his face. What do you do? Deny it? Argue back and forth with me? That's fine.
Well, he hasn't even addressed you on this. That's how unimportant this is to him.
He doesn't have to address me. And let me just also say this. Let me just also say this. People need to understand this right here very clearly. My movement is not about Kendrick Lamar. Let me just quickly go into how Kendrick Lamar even came up. Let me tell you something. I've been calling out black celebrity men for the longest, for years, about discriminating against dark-skinned women. One day, one of the young ladies that I counsel, she messaged me on Facebook, and she said, "Rashida, did you see Kendrick Lamar's fiance?" And I was like, "No, because I don't really listen to Kendrick Lamar like that. I'm from the 90s era, and he's not really on my radar, although I have heard of him." So she said, "You know, go see who his fiance is." And I went and I looked, and after that, I said what I had to say. And I would have said it about any other black man that I felt was discriminating against. I don't bite my tongue. It is what it is, whether you agree with me or not.
All right, my turn. Selling
yeah,
your show's
ahead.
Almost over. Okay, let me
yeah,
be
you got
very
like,
clear.
I got 11
I
minutes, so give me a couple
okay,
minutes.
I don't pull no fucking
because we got another caller
either.
On the line, too.
When you go out and you start conversations with black men about their soon-to-be spouse with coon, motherfucker, things like that, you're not going to get a response. So my movement, okay, as a black woman, is to make sure that we are speaking to our black men with a little bit more gratitude than what we do. I don't care what they do. Number one, let me be very clear. If you have a drop of melanin in you, you are dark-skinned, period. It doesn't matter, and it's not your concern. So if you started a campaign...
It is my concern.
Out, stop.
It is
I'll
my
let
concern.
You see.
I made
it's
it
not
concern.
Your concern
Rashida.
Because you would
Rashida,
never, ever, ever get the chance to date any single one of them. So it shouldn't matter to you who Kendrick Lamar dates, because I really thought, I was like, well, maybe, no, it doesn't. And when you stop airbrushing your pictures in your press and your media kits, then you'll make me believe that your dark skin is beautiful. Okay, so you want to sit up here and talk about light-skinned women, and I've not identified which I was, but I can tell you I was married to very dark-skinned women.
I haven't even
but
said anything
tell
about
you
a light-skinned
no,
woman.
No, but you're right, but you did bring light-skinned women in it when you addressed someone
hey,
else's spouse,
no.
And that's that disrespectful
that,
black
it.
Woman shit
you're
that women
it.
Do. That no,
I'm
no,
done.
No, no, I'm not. You can be done. Like, I let you
you're
speak. You knew
it.
You were going to get this
you're
work. You knew you were going to get this work, but you came out
you
and you spoke against
work.
Someone
you
else's
you
wife.
Me, sweetheart.
You are
you
a disrespectful
me.
Motherfucker. And that is exactly why no
you
one, oh, I already did check you. I listen, no one cares
you
about
can.
What you say. That's why they put the name in fucking parentheses.
You
you're full of shit.
You're on the phone
so like
talking
I said,
to me now.
Saladin,
I'm taking
listen,
your time.
I'm on the phone
so
because
care.
I wanted to make sure you didn't used to date
you
this
care.
Motherfucker.
No,
I wanted
care.
To make sure
you
didn't have
can.
A history.
So you care
no, because
about
I think
issue.
You're sick. And I think that you need help.
You care
one
about
drop
the
of blood,
well,
we
you
all dark skin. Period, point blank. I don't think
and
that's
the
way
the
of life.
Story.
It's the way of life. One drop of dark skin, one drop of melanin, we all dark skin. And the sooner that you realize that, the sooner you'll stop being a fraud. You ain't no goddamn dark
that's
skin.
That's not my
advocate.
Reality.
You don't
that's
see
not my reality.
Dark skin women in America or across the country.
Who are you to speak about anybody's wife? You are disrespectful at the very least to the black man. And any black man that will sit up there and support anything you say after you called another black man a coon and a motherfucker, fuck him too. And I'm done.
Okay. Well, she hung up. She hung up.
Well, let me, she can call back in again. But that's what a lot of these light-skinned women do. They're like I said, I never, if people really checked into my history, if they like you did and really paid attention, then they would know that I've never said anything about a light-skinned woman. Because, again, they're not even my focus. They're not even on my radar. It's the black men, like I said before. Mm-hmm. The black men are the ones who determine who it is they're going to date and who it is they're going to marry, and they're the ones that's discriminating against the dark-skinned women. So I don't have anything. Mm. I never had anything against a light-skinned woman, and I still don't. So.
Nope. Okay. Well, let me take another caller. I got someone calling from the 727. 727, I got you on the line. Just state your name, where you calling from.
Celia from St. Petersburg, Florida.
Okay, sis. How you doing? What's your name?
Hey, yes, in with Sheila's defense. She is not putting down light-skinned women in no type of way. I'm light-skinned, a light-skinned woman. She's done phenomenal things to help me. When she first started, when I first met her, of course, now she's charging for coaching and things like that. But before that, she didn't charge me a dime. She was doing all these great things for me. I'm a light-skinned woman. People have to read her story to understand where her pain is. It has nothing to do with light skin. She's not putting down light. She never put down light-skinned women. It has nothing to do with that. But she is a wonderful person. She has gone through homelessness at 14 years old, raped twice. I mean, if you just you have to read her books, you have to read her story to know what type of person she is. And she does have a valid point. People that are dark or light skinned do get privileges more in certain areas than dark skinned women. Period. Point blank, it is true. It's true.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's all I have to say.
All right, sis.
Thank you,
I appreciate you calling in. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Rashida,
right.
We got like about 6 minutes left on the show. I wanted to just find out about what are some of the current projects that you're working on so that you could share with our audience so they can be on the lookout for those projects.
For sure. Right now I have my wonderful web developer. She is almost done building darkskinisbeautifulcampaign.com. website. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be, the website is going to be actually launching after July 17th, as well as the book A Dark Skinned Woman's Revenge is getting ready to come out, as well as How to Be the Hottest Dark Skinned Chick on the Planet. That book is going to be released after July 17th. Also, I have a show, A Dark Skinned Woman's Revenge, coming up in November in New Orleans. I've been getting a lot of people wanting me to come down there, so finally made that happen.
Right.
I'm really excited about it. So,
doubt. Now, what is the book? Because that's based up off a play that you wrote some time ago, Dark Skin Woman's Revenge. What is that about?
Right, A Dark Skin Woman's Revenge, the play. It actually started out when I was in Los Angeles. I moved out there to pursue the performing arts and decided to just write about my life. And the dynamic of being dark skinned came up in the original play, Ice Cream Lady Dream. So I decided to write A Dark Skinned Woman's Revenge back in 2006 and started doing readings, and then I started doing performances and that kind of thing. And then when I started performing, people would say, well, do you have a book? Or is there something I could buy? You have this on DVD? So I took off a year from performing and decided to put together the book, which is really a short story of six different women and their struggles with being dark-skinned in America, in relationships, on jobs, in any situation that you want to look at, it's their struggle of being dark-skinned. So that's pretty much what A Dark-Skinned Woman's Revenge is all about.
That's peace. So, I mean, so if someone was to ask you, like, what is your purpose? What is your personal mission statement? What is your campaign all about? how would you answer that question?
Simply to equalize the beauty of dark-skinned women and girls.
Hmm.
That's the simple answer to it. I mean, that's pretty much it, because if you equalize, a lot of people have said, oh, you're a dark-skinned supremacist. No. Or, you want dark-skinned privilege. What I want is equality. I'm a humanitarian. So to me, I see the beauty of dark-skinned women and girls as a human right, because going back to the concept of beauty bargaining power, we know that women use their beauty as what Dr. Margaret Hunter calls social capital. And social capital translates into all spheres of human society or for women. And so if dark-skinned women cannot utilize their social capital and their beauty bargaining power, then what of the dark-skinned woman and girl? And so to me, that equates to human rights. So I'm looking for equality, the equalization of the beauty of dark-skinned women and girls.
Oh, wow. Now, this is a related question. What is your relationship status right now? Because you know there's a lot of brothers listening to this right now, like, God damn. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, what's up with that? Are you married? Are you single? What is your relationship status? I'm straight up because I'm asking the questions that I know brothers want
to
know.
Right.
So what's
up
with
that? I get that a whole lot. Well, I'm actually married. I'm married, but I'm separated. I'm married to a dark-skinned man. He's very dark-skinned because, I love dark-skinned people. I love black men of all shades, but this black man happens to be dark-skinned. So,
yeah,
but that's my relationship status.
Okay. Now, moving forward, do brown skin, light skin brothers, do we got a chance with you or what? I'm straight up serious.
God.
You know it's
well,
dudes thinking that.
I'm just going to say it like this. I'm just going to say, and I've said this to people before that have asked me that same question, I have never discriminated against any shade of black men. Now, I've been discriminated against by black men for being dark-skinned, but I have personally never discriminated against any shade of black man ever. So I'm just going to say that and leave it at that.
Okay, that's peace. But, yo, Rashida, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Give us an opportunity to just hear where you're coming from and, just to promote some of the things that you're doing and giving people an opportunity to see the substance of who you are as opposed to some of the stuff that they see in mainstream media. I'm going to close out with my homegirl, Black Page. Again, this is a joint that she did called Traveling. Like I said, if you want to check her out, you can find her on Twitter at Artist Black Page. You can find her on Instagram, The Real Black Page. And ReverbNation.com/Black Page. Thanks again, Rashida. I appreciate that a lot.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Peace, Queen.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.